Hi, this is Jeff Davis. I spent many years just down the road playing rock and roll along the lakefront in Chicago at WLS Music Radio. Sometimes people just need a really good reason to get back together and enjoy each other. This is one of those occasions. And now, more radio stories between old friends on another episode of the Storyteller Studio.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to Storyteller Studio. This is Tim Larson, and we are on the road. Yeah, I decided with my wife to go down to Lake of the Ozarks, and then as long as we're in the neighborhood, I said, hey, Rob Cutter, is it a possibility if you could coax your wife into coming a couple of hours east and meet us in Columbia, Missouri, we could have a little bit of a sit-down? And it has turned into a share-a-thon, hasn't it, Rob?
Yes, it has, Tim. Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
I'll tell you, it's been a fantastic thing for a lot of the people that I've sit down with for Storyteller Studio because we haven't seen each other, one, in a very long time.
Yeah, we were just talking about that.
Yeah, so you think it was like 2009, 2010, but yet we've been in contact and we share stuff and we've done things together, but we physically haven't seen each other. And of course, when you start bringing out the pictures and the bumper stickers and all that stuff, you've got stories that...
Stories beyond the story.
They do. They erupt out of you. So where do you want to start? Do you want to start how you got bit by the radio bug? And then we go from there?
Yeah, well, being a kid up in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, you know, we were able to have access to Chicago radio, WLS and WCFL. Yeah, WCFL.
Yep.
And then I remember my dad when I was a kid, it was always WBBM.
Yeah.
You know, listening to the news. But anyway, I, as a young kid, listening to all those great records, like from, you know, the 60s and 70s, you know, listening to Larry Lujack and John sure. Records Landecker, Jeff Miller,
yeah,
Tommy Edwards and Animal Stories, along with Larry Lujack, old Uncle Lair. I got the bug from when I was probably eighth or ninth grade. I thought, you know, that'd be kind of fun to do. So
just listening to those guys in the bigger market?
Yeah, and then I used to listen to a radio station in Milwaukee, too, AM. It was 92 WOKY.
Oh, absolutely.
And
yeah.
Bob Barry used to do mornings on WOKY, mm-hmm. and there's a guy that used to do the news, Chris Cooper.
Okay.
And when he would start the news, he'd always say, Milwaukee, well, you were sleeping last night, and then he'd always have a segment called Burnt Toast and Coffee Time. And I still remember that.
Was that his kicker story?
Yeah, it was always his kicker story.
And then, if you had to guess, are we talking like mid-70s, something like
probably
that?
Probably early 70s, late
really?
60s. Yeah.
No kidding. Did you ever listen to WKTI up in Milwaukee? Do you
yes.
remember them?
They were, yeah. They were, at the time, they were FM, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember listening to them.
Because literally every radio station that you have mentioned, and I mean literally everyone that you have mentioned, a WROK or WZOK alumni has either worked there or is working there now.
Right.
Yeah. And it's phenomenal that they are powerhouses right now doing either news or WGN News Talk or whatever.
Yep.
And we were looking up to these people going, how do they get to the top of that mountain? And that was the draw for you to get the bug, huh?
Yeah. And listening to that. And then, of course, you know, growing up in Fond du Lac, there was a guy that you guys are all going to know, but I used to listen to him. He was just out of high school and he was working night times at a radio station called WFON in Fond du Lac. Mm-hmm. And that was John Bradmeyer. And listen to him. And I just thought, this guy is crazy to listen to.
He is.
And then they went, and of course, then when he moved to the bigger markets, he changes from John Bradmeyer to Jonathan Bradmeyer.
Right.
And I've followed John, you know, Johnny B's career for, you know, because, you know, he's a Fond du Lac native. I'm a Fond du Lac native.
And I never knew that he was from that area. The first time that I ran into Jonathan Bradmeyer was at WYBR. Do you remember that radio station at the Cherryvale Mall?
He worked there.
He did.
Yeah.
It was like, hey, how you doing? You know, in and out. Because I was there meeting with another friend of mine who I still keep in contact with. And then all of a sudden, he's at KZZP in Phoenix. And my brother-in-law is going, oh, my God, this guy came in town and he's blowing the market up. And I go, what is he, and who's he working for, and so on and so forth. And he's telling us, like, that name sounds familiar.
Yeah.
And then he came back to Chicago at WGN.
Yeah.
And it just went crazy from there. And Clint Wooten, a friend of mine who's down in Nashville, just sent me a link about 3 days ago. He goes, I don't know if you've ever seen this, but Jonathan Brandmeier was off the platform for like 2 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, he just disappeared. He had massive throat surgery.
Did not know that.
He did. There was something that they had to do with his vocal cords. And of course, now he's back. And he linked up with his producers and the people that he did the show with before. And he sounds great. So,
well, you know where he's doing his show from?
No.
Minocqua, Wisconsin.
Come on. And is he like affiliates? Has he got affiliates or is it like a podcast? Or
I don't know because, matter of fact, how I know that is because a former station that I used to work at, KFIZ, was celebrating their 100th anniversary. And they brought all the jocks and the DJs from the past. And I was one of those that they interviewed. And believe it or not, Jonathan Brandmeier was interviewed as well, being a part of the 100-year anniversary of KFIZ.
Oh, my.
So if you go onto the KFIZ website or the KFIZ social pages on Facebook or wherever, you'll see his segment, his interview.
Get out of here.
Yeah, and he did that all from Wisconsin. He says that's where he's living now is Minocqua. Yeah. And that's a beautiful area, by the way.
It is, but it's so weird that you're going to be, and maybe he just got his fill of the big city, and he just didn't have any desire to do it anymore.
Yeah,
that is so bizarre.
But you know, with what with how the internet works and how we've got everything going on, it's kind of like you don't really need to be in the big city anymore.
No.
You know, you can be like where we are today
mm-hmm.
in this beautiful plush room.
Yeah. All right, now that he threw that softball out there, we are at the Hilton Gardens Inn in Columbia, Missouri. And when we said, hey, do you have an extra room that we can sort of sit? She goes, yeah, we have an extra room to the tune of $400. Well, could we sit over here where they're not doing breakfast? You know, because here it is, you know, 2 p.m. Well, we're sort of sitting up for dinner. Okay, well, we have this business center, which is like a closet. And we're going, yeah, that'd be perfect.
But she goes, well, that's only for guests. So like it's kind of like, okay, did they just think that we just came off the streets that we just want to use their facilities to do this podcast?
We sort of look that way, don't we?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Until we says, well, hey, we're staying here. Oh, well, by all means.
Oh, yeah. Now it's different. Now it's all different. Okay, so when you were at, which radio station came next after Fond du Lac?
After Fond du Lac, it wasn't too much after that. I mean, I went up to the up into the Neenah, Menasha, Appleton area in Wisconsin, and I worked at a station called US 96.
Okay.
And I was basically a utility guy. If the morning guy wasn't there, I would do the morning show. The afternoon guy wasn't there, I'd do the afternoons, or the midday person, I'd do middays. And basically, I was just a floater. And then the company that owned US 96 were starting to develop a brand new station in Fond du Lac called WFDL. And so they asked if I'd be interested in being the operations manager and do the morning program from where I was at the time.
And that's the same or different than Sunny 97?
Same thing.
Same thing?
WFDL, so Sunny 97.
Okay, yeah. Good.
And so we put that all together. And the thing that is really cool about that is, I mean, this is the first time I ever put a radio station together from nothing to what they are today, you know, and that's a lot of work.
So did they have the people or did you have to recruit the people too?
I had to recruit the people as well.
Whoa.
Yeah. They already had their sales team in place, but then we just had to assemble the on-air staff.
Wow.
And that's where you came in because you would do liners for us on the overnights. I'd get you to do the liners. I don't know if you remember that or not.
You're kidding me.
No.
I don't remember.
I'd give you a bunch of liners, and then what I'd do is I'd implement them into the computer system, and then those liners were on there forever. And it was your voice that was, they always thought, you know, Tim Larson.
What year would this have been?
It'd have been 93.
So it was after I was at Skyward Promotions.
Yes.
How did I do that? How did I get those to you? How did I record them?
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
Because I sent them to you on a reel or something?
Yeah.
You back
them,
then?
Back then, or was it on a cassette? A cassette.
That's even more embarrassing.
Yeah,
I tried to upgrade things by saying reel to reel, and you go, no, it might have been a cassette.
No, it was a reel, as I recall.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was all automation as far as, but at that time, the automation, we all had like probably 10 or 12 songs on a disc. It was a small disc. It looked like a CD.
Okay.
And that was put into, like, we had three different machines filled up with all the different, you know, hits of one and different hits on the other, and then, of course, the current hits.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was all computerized back then, so we didn't have to spin records anymore.
Yeah, way, way, way above its time when you think about it.
Yeah, but yeah. Now you look at what's going on today, you know, with all the different files, you know, with,
yeah.
You know, the MP3 files, which everything is probably on now.
Well, and, you know, the difference is now compared to the automation back then, after a certain period of time, somebody had to go in and swap all the reels and swap all the cassettes and swap all the carts or whatever needed to be done. Here, there's no swapping anymore.
Nope, it's all done for you.
It
just,
it loops and goes from there.
Yeah.
I mean, you know that I'm part of a radio station in Phoenix, Arizona, Sky 7.
Yes.
And the oddity of what you just brought up of you recorded these liners, you fed them into the automation through the reel-to-reel. I do middays on Sky 7 in Phoenix from Northern Illinois by basically uploading it to the computer. And then the computer says, well, I need to put it in between these two songs. And then I need to put this other one in between these two songs.
I love technology. It's just crazy, you know?
It's also crazy. Do you also take advantage of like iHeartRadio or some of the streaming where it's a person that you have worked with very, very long time ago? They're still in the industry. You know where they are and what station. And you can pull them up and listen to them anytime you want to. You have those kind of people.
There's a few people, absolutely. Yeah.
Wow. And where are they located?
It all depends on who you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, are they the extremes like California and New York, and they're all scattered all over the place?
No, basically they're all local now. For me, anyway, you know, because like for folks that I used to work with at KFIZ, a couple of them are still there.
Oh, I see.
And
gotcha.
So I. You know, I'll listen to them, but I always listen to them on the internet, you know, on my computer because, or my iPhone or my iPad or whatever.
Yeah.
You don't, I don't listen to the radio anymore.
Now, see, that's interesting because you moved away and you go back to listen to them with the technology where I'm talking about these people moved away. Yeah. I didn't. Yeah. And we use the same technology to hear people in San Diego or Richmond, Virginia or wherever.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
All right. So what happened after Sunny 97?
Then after that, I started to, then I went back to KFIZ for a couple of years.
Okay.
And then I just completely got out of radio and then ended up working for the airline.
Wow. So where did WFRL and WXXQ in Freeport
That was my very first radio jobs. And that was in 1979. I think May of 1979 is when I was able to, where I was hired on as the midday person.
Do you remember who hired you?
Yeah, it was Neil Nussbaum.
I remember Neil. A little bitty guy with great big glasses.
Yeah, and I remember that his family was in the chicken business. And they they provided chickens to KFC.
Did they really?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't remember Neil's past. How did they have radio station?
At that time, he was like, because I recall, he was like only a couple of years older than we were.
Oh, he was young.
Yeah, he was like 23 or 24 years old.
I think somebody somewhere said, hey, Neil, can you handle this for us? And he goes, okay.
Well, his family bought the stations. And then, you know, and then, of course, they sold out later on. But, yeah, so his family's bought the radio stations. And then here he is to run them. He was the general manager, you know, over the sales department, the programming department.
Chris O'Brien was our program director.
At XXQ.
Yeah. And you remember Don Wurms?
Yeah.
Sports guy.
Is he still around?
He is.
Is he still selling?
No, he's not working for the radio station.
Okay.
But, of course, he's all, you know, shoulder deep in sports. A friend of mine, Brian Thomas, who's a professional photographer, had a job to do in Freeport of some sort, photographing something. And I can't remember how the conversation went, but after the day of shooting, he came back and he goes, I think possibly I ran into an old radio guy of yours. And he tells me Don Wurms. I go, yeah, of course, sports guy. I mean, my God, he's a walking encyclopedia of sports. And so I tell him, he had no recollection of me. Don had no recollection of me. Well, I told him, I says, you know, tell him that I was with, and I named off all these people like Sherry Schroeder and Bud and Scott and Rob Cutter and all these people. And he went back and he goes, yeah, I remember the time frame. But I still don't remember Tim.
Yeah.
God, that's a killer to the ego, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Jeff. Who was Jeff?
Jeff Jansen.
He came on and he did the afternoon show.
Yeah.
And I can't remember who did the morning show there.
Chris.
Chris O'Brien on WFRL?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't realize
that.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm looking through my WFRL and WSXQ stuff, and you and I must have been there during a transition where FRL was playing like Neil Diamond and Ann Murray, and then all of a sudden we went, or we came from, country.
Yeah.
And I don't know which, but there was a transition part there, and we were only there a very small amount of time.
Yeah.
But boy, did we have an open gate to all these country stars.
Yes.
Because we were the people that, in the area.
I mean, people tuned to, yeah. Because yeah. there wasn't any, I think, WMAQ.
Yes.
That was the big country station in Chicago.
Yep.
It's amazing how this stuff is all coming back.
67 WMAQ. Yeah. WMAQ is going to make me rich.
Yeah.
That was their slogan.
And that was the country station. Oh. If you lived in that area, that's what everybody would listen to.
Gigantic. Yeah. That was Nancy Turner and Lee Sherwood and Charlie O'Neill and on and on. They were not only NBC, but they were in the merchandise mart.
Okay.
And just gigantic. Well, Rockford had WKKN. Do you remember WKKN?
I remember it vaguely.
Yeah, most people do.
Yeah, okay.
Just vaguely. They were good for what they were doing, but they just didn't have the power.
Right.
So they didn't reach out. And so when people came into, what was it? The auditorium that was, I think, named after the Shriners in Freeport. I can't remember, not Tabala, but I can't remember the name of it. But they would all pile into either a state fair or that theater. And honestly, if you remember, all we had to do was either show up or call on the phone. And they're going, yeah, come on down.
Mm.
The wide open door. I mean, country's sort of like that anyway. But here we are sharing pictures today. And it was who? Don Williams.
David Sugar.
Louise Mandrell.
Louise Mandrell. Barbara Mandrell.
Don Williams.
Helen Cornelius.
Yes.
And, Jim Ed Brown.
Yes. Johnny Duncan.
Yeah.
I mean, just on and on and on. And they were just the nicest people. We spent an awful lot of time with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they just didn't care. They go, hey, hang out. We're not doing any other thing before we go on stage. And we're going, sure.
And then I remember, too, hanging out with Johnny Cash and June Carter.
What?
If that was in Casper, if that was in Freeport, and I can't remember anymore.
Well, if it was in Freeport, it wasn't with me, because I would have remembered that.
Yeah.
Wow. So you had some heavy hitters come into Casper, Wyoming, too.
Yeah, when I worked Casper, yeah, wow. Casper Radio.
So this is back in my college years. I was sort of in the, like, freshman, sophomore year of my college years working in Freeport. And then when you moved on, did you go directly to KVOC in Casper?
No, remember I left WFRL and I went to WACI.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I did that for about maybe 6 to 9 months.
Okay.
And I remember the owner of the station fired me because I was doing the early morning show from 5 a.m. to 10 a.m.
Ooh, long shift.
Yeah, and I would put the station on too many days in a row where it was coming on late.
And he knew it?
Yeah,
somehow?
He knew it. Yeah, well, he must have been listening. And so then my time there was cut short. And then it was right after that, I was able to get this job doing mornings at KVOC in Casper. And then I buckled down.
So did you just look up in R&R what some opportunities were?
Absolutely.
You sent out tapes?
So I sent out tapes to KVOC. I had tapes sent out to California, what was that station or the place where, Carmel, California. I had a job offer from there.
Oh my.
And then I had then the job offer came from Casper. And then I was thinking, okay, Carmel or Casper? And both salaries about the same. And I go, it's expensive in California, so I'm going to Casper.
Wow. Yeah. And how long were you in Casper?
Almost 2 years. And then,
okay.
Then I went up to Billings, Montana.
Because I was going to say, there must have been enough time because I decided to come out and visit you. I think it was my junior year in college. So I took Amtrak to Denver and stayed with some friends. And then a 9-hour bus trip to Casper, Wyoming. What a butt buster. But once I got up there, I mean, it was so nice. I think you had maybe 6 inches of snow and we had our shirts off. It was very bizarre.
Yeah, you'd have the snow in the morning, and then in the afternoon, it'd be 65, 70 degrees
out. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we still have pictures of me visiting KVOC. We still have pictures of everybody that you mentioned,
yep,
of the country stars. I don't think a whole lot of people can say that. Mm. Or if they do have them, they don't know how to find them.
Right.
And so I'm really, really grateful that you've got them.
Yeah, and with the pictures, too. You know, back in the day, we didn't have our cell phones. We didn't have, the phone was attached to us 24 hours a day.
Right.
You know, like we were talking earlier, it was with the Kodak camera, with the cube flash, you know, the flash, the cube flashes, and that was it. So it's kind of like, that's all we had, you know, for these pictures, you know. And so I had some good opportunities when I was in Casper, you know, the people that I worked with there.
Yeah. Do you still keep in contact with the Casper people?
Just on Facebook.
Okay.
You know, one of the guys that I worked with, my program director, he's like, I think he just turned 80 now. You know, and back in the time when he hired me, he was like, you know, in his early to mid 40s.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of like, man, the time flies.
Once you do the math, it's a little scary, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, well, yeah, absolutely. I'm still trying to figure out the math with my age.
Where did you go from KVOC in Casper?
Billings, Montana.
I don't remember the call letters.
KGHL.
I would have never guessed that.
790 KGHL. And at that time, we were like the truckers radio station.
Oh,
we were right on the highway I-90, and this is back in the, I mean, they've moved the studios since then, but we used to have a horn on top of the building, so when the semis would go by, they'd go, and we'd have the same thing, so we'd give them a beep back, and we had the string there, it was right there, and we could, you know, we could toot our horns as they were going by as well.
You had the string in the studio?
Yeah, you just grab it and go,
come on.
No, serious.
That is a great story.
And the station, you know, and it was at nighttime, we were heard almost in the entire, you know, like 13 states we were heard in at nighttime.
Wow.
So it was 100,000 watt radio station.
Either way, it was a blowtorch.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, absolutely. And we were everywhere. Canada. I mean, we'd get listeners in Nebraska and Missouri and everywhere.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Anytime we vacation in Montana, if you need to go to the bathroom or get a drink of water, it's a 50-mile drive.
Or just pull over to the side.
I know, or But see, when you don't live there, you don't know. Yeah, you got bear and you got all kinds of things going on there.
Yeah.
So where did you go from Billings, Montana then?
Billings, Montana. Well, I worked at about 4 different radio stations in Billings.
What?
Yeah, I went to, you know, I was at KGHL, and then their sister station was KIDX, Magic 98, and I worked there for probably a good year or so.
Okay.
And then I went to a radio station called KOOK, which was another huge AM station in Billings, and that was Top 40.
Okay.
And then they started a brand new FM station called KBIT, which was a country station, and I ended up working there for about a year or so.
So between Billings, it was basically two ownerships, right?
Yeah.
You had two sets of sister stations.
Yes. Yeah.
Was it a high on-the-street visibility market where you guys were out doing everything. What was one of your favorite promotions that you loved doing?
Of course, the bumper stickers or the window sticker promotions, you know, and then, you know, like you'd work with gas stations or you'd work with, you know, convenience stores. I remember doing a lot of remotes at car dealerships.
Uh-huh.
It seemed like I was always at a car dealership every week.
Well, and they had the money too.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, but that was, you know, that was, and then of course we'd have the giveaways, the money giveaways. And I'm talking about KGHL now, but KGHL was Billboard's Media Market Country Radio Station of the Year for, oh my goodness, probably 3, 4, 5 years in a row.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a, like I said, it was a blowtorch, or like we used to say, it was a blowtorch. We were a big player. The record companies would, you know, with the music director, they would expense everything and they'd fly you out to country groups that they were showcasing, and they'd fly you out for it.
Did you guys get tied in just because of where you were? Did you get tied into, you know, the rodeo events and stuff like that?
Yes, yeah. I was in a rodeo when I was living in, I forgot to tell you too. I went from Montana, Billings, down to Cody and Powell, Wyoming. And I worked down there for about a year and a half.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was the call letters there?
One was called KLZY.
No, it doesn't ring a bell with you and me.
Okay, and then the other one was, it was a country station, I think it was KPOW.
Okay.
Yeah, KPOW.
Wow.
And when I was there working in that market, of course, in rodeo, they're known for, especially in the summer months, they have their rodeos every night there in the summer months.
Every night? Seriously?
Every night. Yeah, because it's, right, you know, Yellowstone, people are at Yellowstone, and then the, you know, Cody's, you know, they got the Buffalo Bill Historical Museum there.
Okay.
It's a pretty area.
Okay.
And that's where I got my pilot's license too, by the way. But anyway.
Which we will get into.
That's another subject. But anyway, so then we're, Yeah, as a radio station, you were always at this rodeo too, doing events. So I mean, and of course, you know, if you're a personality there on the radio stations, you'd have to work, you know, with the bull riders, or if you wanted to grease a pig and put it in a barrel, or doing some calf roping, you'd have to do that as well. So
wow,
yeah, there is a lot of fun. And I remember one time we had to put a pig in a barrel. It was mud. We were just covered with mud from head to toe. In order for them to clean us off, they had the fire department there, and they fired up their hoses to spray us all off. And I thought I was going to drown because it was kind of like a, you know. And I go, well, I never want to go through that again.
And there was more than one of you.
Yes.
The whole staff was doing this thing?
The whole staff was doing it. You know, whether it was the morning guy, the afternoon guy, middays, whatever.
Oh, God.
It's kind of, we were all a part of this event. You know, it's something that the sales department put together.
Of course, guess what? They don't have to partake in it.
Yeah, so anyway, that's, and then we were just at Yellowstone this past summer, and they all went to the rodeo. They go, you know, I come to the rodeo. No, I don't need to go see that again.
I've had enough.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, well, they all went to the rodeo. I just stayed in there. Just did something else.
You know, that was, we didn't think anything of it to a certain degree when somebody, whether the GM or a salesperson, you know, a sponsor goes, hey, what do you think about this? Of course, the salesperson's always going to say, well, sure. And then they go back and they have to eat crow and ask us to do it.
Yeah.
But that was the cool part of being on the air and in people's faces, because we got to do a lot of really weird stuff.
Yes.
And it was consistent. And, you know, that whole thing. Did you ever do the whole thing where you're on a billboard for whatever reason until either somebody won or somebody lost?
Not me personally, but it was another one of our on-air guys
that did that. We always had the FM people that were always on. You know, the rock and roll station was on there for one reason or the other. You know, they raise X amount of money for a charity or something like that. But we were always the ones where they say, well, we want you to scuba dive here, or we want you to ride this, or we want you to be here. And that seems like that was a lot more fun on our side.
Right. And then, of course, you know, you did have the opportunities like flying events, air shows. You were able to, you know, get involved and ride on different airplanes with the air shows.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so that's what got my interest as well. I was already a pilot before that. But, you know, I had opportunities to fly with the Blue Angels, but I missed it because it was a lottery. And they had like four names in this lottery of all the morning shows that were at the time that submitted their guys. And I wasn't picked for the lottery. So it was a lottery system, how you got to.
Wow. This is a side note, but you remember I was one of the announcers for the Ski Bronx Water Ski Show team way back in the day. And one of our little kids, I mean, he was just tiny. Him and two other brothers were in the ski team. He became a pilot for the Blue Angels. And when they came back to Rockford for the air show, I can't remember what year it was, but it was as if he had won the World Series. It was a gigantic sort of a parade-ish thing out at the airport, and he was the star of the week. And, of course, you know, if somebody in the outskirts wanted them to buzz their airport, of course, guess what? They did it because they knew that Drew was part of the deal. And it was so cool. So let's get back to that little thing you said about you being a pilot. I remember you in sort of a lawn chair with a big fan. What are those aircrafts called?
Oh, a powered parachute.
A powered parachute?
Yeah.
Wow.
That was after I decided not to fly, the Pipers and the Cessnas anymore, and the air coupes, because I did have a 1946 air coupe for a while.
Wow.
And I mean, it was a lot of fun, but my family, unfortunately, every time I'd bring them up in the air, they'd all get sick. Yeah. And so I don't know if it was my flying or what. No,
but motion sickness is a tough thing.
Yeah.
It really
so
is.
It was, so they never enjoyed it. And I thought, well, you know, I kind of like got it for, you know, bringing the kids up or, you know, bringing the wife up. But if they didn't enjoy it, I go, well, I just don't want to do this anymore. So then I've got one of those little ultralights, those powered parachutes, because in my neighborhood, when we lived outside of Fond du Lac, there were a lot of folks' house, and I'd see these powered airplanes and these powered parachutes going all over the place. I go, where the heck are they? And I'd follow them to where they landed. I started asking about it. And then they put me in contact with the dealer of who sells them, and next thing you know, I got myself a power parachute.
So was it much of a transition since you already were a pilot?
Well, you knew the basics, but here's the interesting thing about this: the guy that I bought it from, great guy, a retired general in the Army.
Okay.
But he had Parkinson's disease.
Okay.
So he was when he was teaching me how to fly it. You know, it was a tandem seat, and he's a little shaky. You know, but I mean we did fine. And then what happened is when I bought my machine, and he was teaching me how to fly my machine. He had me hooked up, grabbed the walkie-talkie, and he thought he strapped it onto my shirt or my jacket I was wearing at the time. And so when I took off, next thing you know, I look, there's the walkie-talkie, and I'm already going up in the air.
Oops.
Yeah.
So there's none of this, hey, Rob, how you doing?
Yeah, because he was gonna teach me, instruct me as I was up there and what to do and how to get down. And so I'm up there, I'm going, okay, now what am I going to do? You know, and I figure, okay, this can't really be all that hard, just to the fact, you know, that's a powered parachute and you got the fan behind you and whatever. And I go, okay, decrease power, you're coming down. Increase power, you're going up. So, you know, I got my runway all picked out where I was going to land, and I just decreased power, squeaked it onto the turf, and baba bing, baba boom, walked away from it. And he goes, that was interesting.
As he stood there with his walkie-talkie.
Yeah. So, but I think somebody else would have probably freaked if they didn't have, you know, if they weren't a pilot or if they didn't have experience.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, are you an Oshkosh guy?
Yeah, I was, but now living down in Missouri, I don't get up there as often as I would.
One of the nicest 2 days I spent a couple of years ago before the pandemic hit, 72 degrees. I went by myself. You just grab your sort of chair and a bag and off you go.
Yeah.
You run into the nicest people. They had pretty good sized country acts, and you're on the tarmac with a B-52. Everybody is looking for shade under wings, you know, when you've got your drink and your lunch and your whatever. Yeah. And you meet people from Australia and New England
everywhere.
This is just a giant, giant event. I really want to go back. Of course, you know, you had the pandemic that pulled the rug out from everybody, mm-hmm. but one of the things that I loved about this, and I don't know if you're aware of it, they build a plane during the event.
Yeah.
And if you want to be part of that, you can go put one rivet in the wing and then move on. And, of course, your name is on the list of having helped build that plane. Later on, we knew a guy that married a friend of ours' daughter that worked for the EAA. And so he ends up flying those one-of-a-kind made planes that they have up there in Oshkosh. He'll fly them down for a fly-in breakfast charity type thing at Poplar Grove or wherever, and they make use of them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, I thought they sold them, mm-hmm. but I guess they still hang on to some of them down there.
Yeah.
And it's so well put together.
Paul Harvey was always up there in Oshkosh.
Didn't know that.
Bob Collins.
Well, Bob Collins,
was huge. I think he was on their board at one time, you know,
wow.
for the Experimental Aircraft Association.
Yeah. And for people that don't know Bob Collins, Bob was on WGN for many years as an afternoon and then a morning personality. I can't remember the year, but, you know, when he signed off on the air, he says, you know, we'll see you tomorrow morning. This is a great day to fly.
Yep.
And he took off and something went wrong.
It was a mid-air collision.
Was it a mid-air?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Didn't he end up on top of a hospital or something?
Yeah, rooftop of some building, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we lost Bob Collins that day. Yeah. And, of course, they still have a whiskey toast every year, you know, on the day that he died. So Bob is not forgotten at WGN, that's for sure.
Yeah, he was always fun to listen to.
Wow. Hey, tell me some of the do you remember the parties we used to have?
Vaguely.
Does anything come
vaguely? I don't really remember any of, seriously, it's kind of funny how I moved around so often, you know, and I've got different connections with all these different people, and sometimes you have to remind me.
Yeah.
And I go, I still don't remember it, because I still have people come up to me from high school. Remember when you did that? Remember when you did? I go, no, I have no recollection.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, here's the one that I remember that is directly connected to you.
Well, am I going to get in trouble with my wife?
No, not at all. I'm going to get in trouble with my wife. Our wives are sitting just a stone's throw away from us here in this makeshift studio. But I lived where my mom still lives, on the west side of Rockford by the TV stations. Well, WFRL was downtown at the top of the State Bank Center in Freeport.
Yes.
Which, generally speaking, is about 20 miles away. All right. So we decided that we were going to have a staff party of some sort. So, you know, as conversations go, I said, well, geez, we've got a lot of property. If people are willing to make the drive out to Rockford, we've got this great big pile of wood and limbs and stuff. We'll do a bonfire. We can do this and we could do this. And of course, it escalated into this other stuff. So Don Wernz has the connection because he's a sales guy. He said, I got a keg of beer waiting for you to pick up at X place, whoever it was. Make sure you get the stopper and the whole nine yards. So I'm driving my 1972 Chevy Nova from Freeport, middle of the afternoon, to Rockford. Woo, 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 behind me, because I did not come to a complete stop at a stop sign, which really pisses me off now, because that same intersection is a roundabout. Yeah. So I had this thing in the trunk, and of course it's bobbling around, which was so stupid because you don't want to shake beer for 20 miles. And I had this stopper in the front floorboard of my car.
Oh, goodness.
He never noticed. Where you headed? I says, I'm literally half a mile down the road. He goes, okay. So we went. So you guys all pile in, and of course, you know, everybody's bringing food, and we're firing up the grill and the whole nine yards. And we started the bonfire. Now, you remember Jeff Jansen?
Yes.
Okay. Jeff went on from WFRL and WXXQ to work part-time at WZOK. I don't know if you remember that.
Vaguely.
Yes. So here's Jeff, and he's just jumping right in with helping with the fire. So he took these limbs that were probably easily an inch and a half diameter. I would hold them against my knee and pull and break them.
Roger.
He slammed them against his shin over and over and over again. Now, this is a guy that I had just recently met, and I'm going, he's a badass. Oh, my God.
You didn't realize what happened. Okay.
I didn't realize what happened. Jeff had a wooden leg because of a motorcycle accident. So it was nothing for him to rack these limbs against, because he couldn't feel anything.
Well, yeah, obvious.
Yes. And I'm sitting there with my mouth hanging open. I had a couple of beers, and I'm going, I am not making sense of any of this until later on. They go, oh, well, geez, that would have been nice to know,
yep.
You know, with Jeff.
But. Yeah, meanwhile, your chin is all bloodied up and all bruised.
Yeah,
from you trying to.
Yeah, I'm going to try it. It's just not going to work. Not going to work. But we had a great time.
Yeah. I remember we had pictures of that.
Yeah. I would really like to know, you know, what happened to Judy and what happened to Chris O'Brien and those people. Yeah.
And Jeff.
Yeah. But there's certain radio stations that either it's your time in the life or it's the people or the events or something to where they gel. And that small group of people, maybe you were only there a year, but that small group of people have just contacted and kept in contact forever.
Right.
And then others just fade away.
Yeah. There's times that you and I, for example, I mean, we'd probably go a few years without reaching out to one another. But mm-hmm. now since the technology, you know, we've been reaching out probably since, oh my gosh, I don't know, probably the last 10 years, 15 years.
Easily.
You know, at least, you know.
Yeah.
And then periodically it would be a phone call here, phone call there. But we always stayed in contact with each other. We always knew where we were.
I have many people that I have known forever that I keep in touch with. Do you have people like that too, that
no.
you can just pick up?
Just you.
Seriously.
Yeah. I mean, cause you know, I had such a, an interesting career cause you know, I left radio and then I've got more people that I hang out with and then I was pilots, airline pilots.
Sure. Yeah.
And with flight attendants and that type of thing. I have more association with them than I did with the folks that I worked with in the radio.
How many years were you in radio collectively?
Collectively, 26 years maybe.
Wow. Yeah. So tell me about Ryan International Airlines.
Well, first of all, I worked at Midwest Airlines,
okay.
which was a Milwaukee-based airlines. Mm-hmm. They started back in 1984. Kimberly Clark up in Neenah, Menasha started them.
Okay.
And then they came back down to Milwaukee.
Okay.
And then they opened up this couple of routes, like Boston was one, Kansas City was one, and I think Denver might have been another one. But then they just continued to grow. They'd buy one airplane, next thing you know, two. And then by the time they, you know, were a full-fledged airline, they had like 40 different airlines, you know, 40 different airplanes.
Oh,
and okay. So then they had to hire pilots and flight attendants and that type of thing. And I didn't work as a pilot. I just thought, you know, I don't want to relearn. I don't want to do commercial aviation. I just want to just be a part of the aviation experience. So I became a flight attendant for 10 years.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you really have to know everything about possibly what could go wrong or right when you're a flight attendant, because
it was always, it was 6 weeks
in the middle of it.
Yeah, it was 6 weeks of training. You know, I mean, you got to, you know, you're trained on, you know, CPR, using the defibrillators, all the different scenarios that could happen. If you're going to have an emergency landing, you got to prep the safety cards are. But,
sure. You
know, but you got to basically have that all memorized, and you got to teach people and teach them what to do if there was an emergency. And, you know.
So how was that drastically different from your average Joe being your passenger to Ryan and having military folks?
Yeah, that was, that was a lot. The military guys were a lot of fun to work with as far as, the demeanor of them. you didn't have a lot of, a lot of snooty people, because there'd be a lot of snooty people you'd work on with the airlines, you know, but the military, they were so humbled. And I was able to experience with working with Ryan International, I was able to experience of going all over the world. I mean, I was in Cuba, I was in Kuwait a number of times. Romania, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, a lot of these places that you heard of on the TV when the war was going on, these are the places I was at.
And were you basically transporting the military? You would literally drop them and grab another group or come back empty?
Yeah, we'd end up in Germany. Okay. Leipzig, Germany was one of our holdovers, so we'd always have a lot of overnights and 3-4 night stays in Leipzig, and then from there we'd usually take off. We'd either go to Romania, or we'd go to Italy, or we'd go to Saudi Arabia, or Diego Garcia, which is another military base.
And were you servicing all the branches?
Yeah, all the branches, and even some foreign military. I remember Romania. Their military, there's the Polish military. I remember hauling them around. The Irish. I remember that we flew all these different militaries were, of course, you know, allies with the United States.
And because of it being military and government, did you know ahead of time where you were going, or like one day?
One day. And I never could let her know until we got there. I go, oh, by the way, guess where I'm at?
Well, that's a little creepy.
Yeah. And then there'd be times where I'd say, we'd be over there, and they were 18-day trips. So I'd leave, and I'd be gone for 18 days. And I remember one day I called her up and said, yeah, they extended my trip for another 10 days. So it was 28 days I was gone working for this Ryan International Airlines.
Wow.
Yeah.
And when you had layovers, you could just do whatever you needed to do wherever you were at.
Yeah, you're free to do whatever you wanted to do. So I would, every once in a while, I would, I kind of look back on this, you know, because I'd be in Kuwait City, or I'd be in somewhere in like Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, or something like that. And then I just walk around and I go, I'm not sure this is a good thing for an American white guy walking around the streets of, especially Kuwait City, you know, I'm not sure if I should be doing this or not, but you know, I went there and I went to a KFC or a Burger King, cause they do have them there.
Something familiar
or Chili's.
But didn't it dawn on you at one time where you go, you know what? The last time Lisa heard from me was 3 days ago. And you're going, oh, this is not good.
That was a thing too. We had to coordinate our times, because a lot of times it'd be a 12, 14 hour difference. I go, okay, what time is it there? So we'd always have to realize what time it was back in the States.
And you did that for how long?
I did that only for a year.
In my head, I would have guessed 4 or 5 years.
Well, with Ryan, but with Midwest, I was with Midwest for eight.
Maybe that's the confusion then. Or maybe it just seemed like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, because then Midwest, they Frontier bought them out.
Oh,
and then Frontier decided to carry the brand of the Frontier brand, and then they just basically, I think all they did is just buy the branding from Midwest. Yeah.
What have you been doing recently that occupies your time? Because that is a story in itself, and I'm really thankful that you made me a part of it. Either. Yeah. you would hop on the horn, you go, hey, can I bounce something off of you?
Yep.
You know, because, you know, sort of when you're a one-man band, you don't have that person, that other vice president down the hall that you can go, you know, bounce something off of. You have to rely on your buddies.
Right. Well, what happened was, is, you know, I was ill for a few years, and then I felt like I wanted to do something, get back into radio. So I decided, I go, you know what would be a fun thing to do is share stories of miraculous events. I started a website called legendsoffaith.org, mm-hmm. and then I started working on stories, like some of the miraculous events that happened during the startup of our country with George Washington. And I was kind of basing him off from Paul Harvey and the rest of the story. I tried to not give up too much information for the first couple of minutes, and then more toward the end, you know, the last 25, 30 seconds when I'd give out the name.
And you do a really good job at that. I think the one, the first one that I played, which was your litmus test for me,
yes,
you know, the first one you hear, when we went back on at WLUV, we could pretty much do whatever we wanted to.
Right.
So when you told me about this, I go, send me the files. I will play these things.
Yeah.
And the first one was Jackie Robinson.
Yep.
And so you tease and you tease and you tease, just like Paul did.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden the listener thinks, oh, I got this.
Yeah.
And then you go, no, it turns a left turn instead of a right turn. And then you go, really? It's Jackie Robinson? And you've done that with people that have started Chick-fil-A, and you've done that with the Hershey people, and it didn't matter that they were quote-unquote famous or not,
right,
but they were somebody that at the end, you knew who you were talking about.
Right. And they're all based, though, on, you know, their faith that got them through it.
Yes.
And these are backstories that you never really hear of, you know. You always hear of the secular end of it. It's kind of nice for those folks that have, that are faith and spiritual, when they hear that, oh, I never knew that.
No.
Or, you know, and so they're fun to listen to.
And that's what Sandy was more curious about. Since you don't hear it, since it's deeper and underlying and more personal with this story, how do you get that information? And that must just...
Well, first of all, I start with Wikipedia with a tongue-in-cheek. it's kind of like, okay, well, this is not very informative or this is not very helpful. You know, I start doing Google searches on, you know, the faith of the guy from Hershey's, the faith of Milton Hershey. And then often the information comes up, you know, like CBN may have interviewed him already or some of these other talk shows. And then I start reading up on him or reading stories on him from, you know, various different publications on the internet. So nice, because years ago, you probably wouldn't be able to do this.
No.
But so then I just start doing my own research, and then I just start formulating my own ideas and put my own. Sometimes I'll put a little extra in there where, you know, I go, okay, well, I'm sure this is how we thought. So I'll kind of like embellish a little bit, you know.
You add Rob Cutter Hollywood into it.
Right. I'll put a little spice into there to make it a little bit more interesting for people. I've got one that I'm working on right now, which is going to be released on Monday. The last one I did was on Patton.
Nice.
He needed a prayer because the weather was crappy, and mm-hmm. he talked to the Army chaplain. He goes, chaplain, wrap me up a prayer. We need to get this weather out of here, because they couldn't do anything advancing to Germany until the weather cleared.
And he said, yes, sir, and walks away and writes him a prayer?
Yeah, a few minutes later, he writes him a prayer, hands him the hands him the slip of paper. Here's your prayer, sir. So, good, make me 250,000 copies.
What?
Yes. Yeah, so he
passed them out to everybody in the armed forces.
Yeah, yeah. It was 250,000 went up to all the soldiers, and then on the backside it was a Christmas message, because it was just before Christmas, and then a couple of days later the weather cleared, and then of course the Americans and the Allies were able to march into Germany.
Yeah, but how smart of him to literally kill three birds with one stone. One, it was Christmas.
Yep.
Two, it was a morale booster. Everybody's on the same page.
Yeah.
And then three, hey, let's kick in all together and see if we can get this done.
And then he commanded everybody to say the prayer, of course, you know. And of course, you know, the more they pray, the more things happen, the more miraculous things happened. And baba bing, baba boom, the weather cleared and they were able to, march to victory.
Wow. You know, the nice thing about what you're doing too, and again, it's a lot of work. I can only imagine doing just one episode of what you do. You don't just read it. You've got all the sound effects, whether it be war or whether it be birds chirping. It doesn't matter what the sound effect is. It draws you in more than even a Paul Harvey rest of the story.
Right.
Because you need to be a wordsmith on top of it. I'm standing beside that guy when I hear all the sound effects.
Right.
So compliments to you for going to the extra work on that.
That's a joy for me because I have always, you know, I mean, it's part of my radio, you know, theater of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are listening to, even though you can see the video, you know, the visuals on YouTube.
Yeah.
But the theater of the mind and the audio is the most important part because most people that listen to a podcast are listening it on their way to work.
Right.
Or they got a few minutes at, you know, on a break or whatever, listening on their iPhones. And sometimes an iPhone won't catch all the different sound effects that I have into each story.
Really?
You can really get the benefit of it. Plug it in, put some headsets on, and then you can go, wow, that's weird. You know, because sometimes the door sound effect of a door slamming might come on the right side of your ear, and then you'll hear the walking coming in from another direction or something. And it's kind of like, okay, what's going on here?
I didn't hear that before.
Yeah. So you can only pick that up if you're listening to it on a headset. So,
wow.
I mean, even like on an iPad or an iPhone, you're going to be fine. You still hear some of the effects, but there's a little bit more into it than, you know.
So now that you're 60 episodes in with Legends of Faith, where does it go from here? Do you ever feel like you're running out of content?
No. No, there's so much content out there. There's
good for you.
Gobs of content. But now we're going to be adding another segment, and we hope that people can visit legendsoffaith.org. We're going to be starting building a studio down in the basement because right now I call it the dungeon, which basically it does look like a dungeon in our basement.
And most studios that start out to be studios are now dungeons.
Yes, most definitely. But we're going to be building that out, and then we're going to be adding another segment called Beyond the Journey. And it's going to be live content. Well, not live. It'll be, of course, recorded. We're going to be talking about miraculous things that happen to people, everyday Joes. You know,
so it's an interview deal.
It's going to be an interview deal. It's going to be, of course, audio, and then we're going to be setting up cameras, and it's going to be on camera. And then if it's remote, interviews, it's going to be there's platforms out there like Zoom that you set up, and you can do your interviews that way as well.
Is it also faith-based?
Yes,
it is.
Yeah.
We were just extras in a movie that is called Trial by Faith. And director Matt Chichella is from the Rockford area. It was all shot in the Rockford area. But I think they're going to give the impression that it was taking place in Georgia or something like that.
Okay.
And so have you ever been an extra in a movie?
No, but I auditioned for one where I had to walk on and go, okay, thank you. And you keep walking off the stage. It was for a Kenny Rogers movie.
Come on.
Yeah, he was in... say he was up in Billings. They were doing a Western up in Montana on the outskirts.
And is that the one with Reba McEntire that was in it? Remember that?
Yeah, it may have been that one. But anyway, they were looking for extras. And, I was doing radio at the time. I go, okay, I think I might have this. No. Okay, thank you. Next.
Ouch. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, there's a blow to your ego. Yeah.
Go put that pig back in that barrel. That's what you're good at.
That's right.
But when we were in this extra thing, it's faith-based, and it's got these different stories going on. Well, of course, they film it in different orders, so you have no idea what's going to follow you or what's going to be ahead of you. So we're in this church, and of course, it's a long day. It's a hurry-up-and-wait thing. And so we're part of this congregation. And we go through the things, and at the very end, they say, all right, we've got these 10 expressions that we need you guys as a group. There was maybe 8 or 9 of us in this framed-up shot to do, and later on, they'll pick which one they want. So it's, all right, act surprised. Act like you don't believe what the pastor just said. And then act like you're sort of, really concerned, and on and on. And there was maybe 10 or 15 different expressions. To this day, we don't know which of those expressions they're going to use. And the very next night, we were in a bar, which was literally across the street in Pecatonica, Illinois, between Rockford and Freeport.
Yep.
And they purposely set us along this bar and did not tell us what the scene was going to be because they wanted our raw reactions. And this guy, he's down and out, he's got troubles. Everybody's trying to help him, and he's resistant, and he keeps drinking, and, that whole thing.
Yep.
They're trying to help him get home, but he doesn't want to leave, and one more, And then all of a sudden, a bar fight breaks out. Right, literally 5 feet from me. Yeah. Well, of course, that's the reaction they wanted, because we didn't know a bar fight was going to break out.
Right.
So we'll see what happens.
Hopefully you're not on the cutting floor.
No, I know. God, wouldn't that be painful? That would be so bad.
Talking about a blow to ego.
It would be. It would be like 12-hour days, no pay, and then nothing.
I'm a pile right there. And,
you know, in the Storyteller Studio back in Rockford, which is our retail space at Edgebrook, we literally have a small table of WROK and WZOK alumni. You know, it's pictures of them, what they look like now or what they're doing now. And the joke is, if you don't see yourself on the table, you're on the cutting room floor. And I took an old reel and cut it up. And so there's this tape on the floor. It's like, yeah, you're in there somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, have fun. Have fun trying to find a reel to reel.
Oh, it's sort of painful, isn't it? Well, Rob, thank you so much for sitting down and doing
this. It was a pleasure. It was a lot of fun.
Memories like nobody's business.
And we got more, too. You know, there's part two to this something down the line.
Somewhere down the line. And keep in mind, we're going to scan in these photos from 1979 and 1980, and we will put them on lifes3by5s.com on the Storytellers tab. So when we talk about Jim Ed Brown and Helen Cornelius or Louise Mandrell, you'll be able to see the pictures that we're talking about. Rob, thank you so much. And it's time for us to go like out to dinner and just sort of paint the town red.
You're right about that. I'm not about painting it red, but paint it something.
Painting something. Take care, man.
All right, take care.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Storyteller's Studio.